I've asked a couple of hunters if they've been out looking, and seems like people were keeping their cards real close to their chests.
The autumn hunt begins with immediate harvests for both moose and mountain goat. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. That news and more up next. A series of earthquakes hit two separate locations from Wednesday to Thursday, each about 90 miles from Upper Lynn Canal communities. Tremors from a magnitude 4.57 earthquake were noticeable in the Upper Lynn Canal Wednesday evening just a few minutes after 6 p.m. The epicenter was about 90 miles west of Haines at a depth of 6 miles. According to the Alaska Earthquake Information Center from the University of Alaska Fairbanks Geophysical Institute, several quakes followed near the same location. The most recent one at the time of this report was a magnitude 3.27 at 9:22 a.m. Thursday at a depth of 1 mile. Several other quakes have occurred throughout Thursday, about 90 miles southeast of Haines, just east of Juneau. An Alaska Public Offices Commission investigation that recently led to fines for the campaign to reelect Representative Bill Thomas has also uncovered an overfunding error in the campaign account.
You know, a violation is a violation. And in this case, it was a violation of a campaign finance rule.
APOC Executive Director Paul Dauphiné explains that Representative Bill Thomas's campaign broke the rule through a money transfer between campaign accounts. The law allows candidates for the Alaska State House of Representatives to transfer up to $5,000, and APOC found that Thomas's February 2010 Year Start report indicated a transfer of $15,291.40 from the 2008 campaign to the 2010 campaign.
The reason for that is it's to keep the playing field level for all candidates. And what happened was that he transferred $10,000 and some odd over the limit of $5,000.
Former Thomas campaign staffer Greg Richmond told APOC before a Wednesday hearing this week that the carryover violation was his fault and that it happened because he was in shock as his wife was dying of cancer. Thomas told APOC, quote, that to capitalize on the grief of an individual here is wrong, end quote. Thomas said this week he wants to get this resolved and move on. Dauphiné says Thomas agreed to forfeit the $10,000 to the state and to pay a fine of $1,000 to the commission.
Mr. Thomas was very cooperative, very forthcoming when we started asking for things. He provided everything we asked for.
Although Thomas was running unopposed in last year's primary, APOC has said that overfunding a campaign can create an unfair advantage by preventing an opponent from entering the race because of a disparity in resources.
We try to conduct audits of everyone. It's difficult with campaign financing because the reports come in big chunks. You know, we might get several hundred in a day. And we try to audit them as they come in and just take a look. Sometimes, you know, things get missed because there's so many. You're trying to get put your eyes on every piece of paper. Some we catch, unfortunately. Some we don't. We are fortunate, though, that the public understands what we do, and the things we don't catch, many times they do, and they bring it to our attention through a complaint.
APOC themselves generated the overfunding complaint when they came across it during a separate investigation that began with a citizen complaint. Both were settled through a consent agreement approved in a hearing Wednesday. The first complaint came from blogger Linda Kellen Beagle nearly 1 year ago and led to the finding that a series of thank you ads that ran in a local newspaper were illegal. The Anchorage-based writer says she worked independently to report the action and was not paid for her work. Thomas and a former campaign member have agreed to pay the fines associated with that and to attend trainings on campaign financing. The two complaints were handled together in this week's hearing for convenience, says Dauphiné. He adds that the settlement on the overfunding issue came nearly a year after its discovery due to the time Thomas was in legislative session. A rule is in place that grants immunity to members of the legislative branch while the legislature is in session. The first moose came in within hours of the opening of the local 2011 moose season Thursday. Haines' Richard Boyce brought a harvested bull moose in to the Haines Fish and Game office Thursday afternoon that qualifies with three brow tines and a rack bigger than 50 inches. This year's moose hunt opened September 15th with rules similar to last year. Anthony Krupe is a biologist with the Department of Fish and Game. He's manning the check station for the next week and will be in and out of town until the season closes October 7th.
We had a moose meeting last Friday and talked about the antler configuration strategy and tried to dial hunters into what to look for the spike or the fork or the three brow tines, and 50 inches makes the fourth way to make a legal moose.
The pleasant weather leads the department to expect a few moose in over the upcoming weekend. Last year, Northern Lynn Canal hunters brought in 21 moose.
Of those, three were sublegal that failed to meet the antler configuration strategy. Two didn't have three brow tines, and one failed to meet 50 inches. So just make sure you do an extra good job of looking for the three brow tines, and estimating 50 inches is always challenging, but some hunters are successful with that strategy.
250 permits were issued to local hunters this year. Last year, about 190 permits were hunted, with something between 8 and 12% success rate, as in recent years. This year, the department is aiming for 20 to 25 bulls over the hunt. That number comes from an annual aerial survey conducted each winter.
At the end of the hunt, we fly a survey, and so I flew a survey last December, and it was right on average with most other years. Usually we see 195 moose. Last year I saw 197 moose. A couple of the key statistics that are important are the bull-to-cow ratio. So for what our management strategy says is for every 100 cows we see, we want to see 20 to 25 bulls, and I saw 39 to 100. So looks like the bulls are doing really well. Calves were doing well likewise, and for the cow-to-calf ratio, we saw about 23 calves for every 100 cows, and had a really good survey, and so we're expecting a good hunting season this year.
A video is posted at adfg.alaska.gov. that quizzes hunters on legal or sublegal moose if you need some practice before going out for the real thing. It also explains the history of the antler configuration strategy that the Northern Lynn Canal hunt depends on.
Residents of Haines, Skagway, and Klukwan are very fortunate to have a subsistence moose hunt. It's one of the rare things that we have in this state where users of that herd are allowed to participate in a subsistence hunt, which keeps the permits at about 250 each year. And the hunting area is all of the moose habitat within Unit 1D, so includes the Chilkat and Klahini, as well as the Sirku and the Taquin rivers. In Skagway, there's less opportunity for moose harvest, but in a little bit, and people tend to take a bull or two out of the Katsahin each year. So if you're on the river not hunting, just be aware of hunting parties, and make sure that if you're a hunter that you can see your backdrop, and make sure that you identify a legal animal and make a good clean shot.
In the past, dead sublegal moose have been found left in the field. Krupe says a system is in place for handling an illegal moose the grown-up way.
Every year we have a moose or two that fail to meet the antler strategy, and really the best thing to do is to bring it in. We'll check it in, and if it doesn't meet the guidelines for harvest, then we'll distribute the moose meat to a community organization, and you'll spend some time in with the magistrate. But it's certainly a better alternative to leaving it lay in the field.
The moose check-in station is open from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. It's located at the Y intersection where the Haines Highway meets Haines. Hunters have 3 days to bring in their kill. If the office is closed, hunters can leave contact information on the board for a call back later.
I've asked a couple of hunters if they've been out looking, and seems like people were keeping their cards real close to their chest. So we'll see how the first couple of days turn out. But with this weather, I think we'll have some good success in the first week.
Stay tuned to KHNS for updates on the moose harvest throughout the season, which runs from September 15th through October 7th. A photo of the first moose in will be posted alongside this newscast at khns.org. First day of goat season already has one of the most popular areas closed. The harvest limit for goats was reached at Tuggahoe on Thursday, closing 7-mile area to mountain goat hunting less than a day after opening. Again, Fish and Game biologist Anthony Krupe.
We've also started our mountain goat hunting seasons, and RGO26 opened up August 1st and goes through November 30th. Today, September 15th, we've got RGO23 and RGO24, which are two goat hunt areas that are open through November.
This year's Mountain Goat Hunt is managed like other years with a point-based system determined by a flyover survey each year. 6 points for every 100 goats counted. Nannies count as 2 points, billies as 1 point. Last year, 38 mountain goats came in from Unit 1D. An emergency order was issued shortly after the season opened Thursday, closing mountain goat hunting along the Tokchinook Mountain Range from the northwest saddle of Mount Tuggehoe to Haines.
One of the areas that is always very popular is up on Tuggehoe. And so we have a one-point system there. Last year, we exceeded that harvest. 5 points were brought in the first 2 days. So it's an area that a lot of people have approached us in the past, including the advisory committee, of how do we make this kind of a youth hunt opportunity where we can send out younger kids for kind of some of the more accessible hunts like that. And so we've always encouraged people to, you know, let the younger kids have a chance at a goat going up Tuggehoe.
The harvest limits have increased in other parts of the unit for the registration permit hunt, with more points available in parts of the Tokchinooks and the far side of the Katsahin. The archery-only area that opened in Skagway just a few years ago is also open again this year.
We'll keep updated goat hunting maps at the Fish and Game office, so as the harvest comes in, we'll reduce those points as they come in.
The area Fish and Game office phone number is 766-2830. Reporting for KHNS, I'm Tara Bicknell.